You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Kadir Atiya. He's talking to me from Berlin. Kadir, nice to be talking with you today. What are you working on at the moment?
Oh, wow. I just arrived from a long trip, actually in the U.S., where I was at UC Berkeley organizing a seminar on the relation between the secular and the spiritual in terms of trauma, collective and individual trauma, and with a particular focus on Islam and psychoanalysis. This was with my friend, the anthropologist Stefania Pandolfo. And at the same time there, I'm showing the installation of sculptures at the Museum of the University, which is called J'accuse. And I'm very happy because it's an installation that reenact the project of the film by Abel Gance, criticizing the rising of the war during the rise of the Nazi, and inviting these injured faces soldiers to be part of his film. And I really wanted to reenact this act of pacific action to warn the people that we are also living, sadly, again, in a time where humanity did not, apparently learn from its own mistakes, and war is like rising everywhere. So,
let's talk a little bit more about that, because the sculpture also ties into, of course, some of your thinking around the talk there, and I want to learn more about Abel Gance. Abel Gance is a filmmaker, of course. I saw a very obscure one, I think. I saw Napoleon by him with a live orchestra in New York years ago, and it was an incredible experience. It was a 4-hour film, silent, and I was riveted. Yeah. I was on the edge of my seat. So, and I'm not so such a film person, but that was extraordinary. So you're talking about Abel Gance's a critique of the Nazis, right? Can you put that in the context of your sculpture? Because I want to hear more about that installation, get a sense of it. There may be images in this interview, but tell me more about that.
Well, actually, I'm very concerned by the, as an artist, the limit of art in terms of what is the relevance of this mankind activity today in the world that is so much disappointing in terms of the rise of all these dark, obscure sides of the human beings that we are attending again. I'm talking about fascism, especially in Europe, in the US too. But what I found interesting with the filmmaker Abel Gance is that he was not only a filmmaker for me, he was wondering also what is the responsibility of being an artist in a society. And I like this. I don't think that art is only for this sort of hypocrisy of the salon, the openings, the champagne, and blah, 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 which I've always hated. I'm much more concerned by when start really like the relevance of an artwork. And I think it starts when it blurs the border between representation and action. And when Agans wanted to shoot a film against the war, he went to visit former soldiers from the first war, from the World War I, who have very scary injuries on their faces. We call them in French "gueule cassée," broken faces. And they have been everywhere, even in the U.S. because this war was world war. France has 1.5 million, the British almost the same. I think the American a bit less, but anyway, the German 1.5 million of broken faces. So the whole society got into, the horror of the World War I, basically by many things, but also by death, of course, but also by the traces of it, which is a, field that interests me a lot, because as you know, I work a lot on the reparation, but what means reparation is also the injury. So the fact that Abel Gance went to visit these guys and asked them to act in his film, and they declined the invitation first, then almost 15 years after, he came back to them and really like warned them to be part of the second shot of the very same film, to denounce the rise of the coming up war. Actually, they all did accept it, and I found this very interesting. The fact that for the second shot, for the second version, the whole soldiers accepted, and indeed the film ends that way. You have a sort of march, military march, of all the dead people coming back from the battlefield, the ghost, because there is a sort of prophetic figure who is calling them to convince the humanity that they should not start the war again. And I think this is interesting. I think this is interesting in many ways. Again, because it really asked us not only to the artist what means acting for improving the world, not only from, let's say, the obvious question of the war, but also relearn to be much more tolerant with the others, to unlearn from all those normalization of fascism that the contemporary society is completely absorbed in, reinvent behaviors that productively improve the environment where we are living. I mean, many concerns. I mean, equality between genders, between cultures, between social classes. And I think that when I did this series of sculptures in which are all inspired by the portrait, by the face of these soldiers who have agreed to act in the film of Gantz, I really wanted to sort of excavate against this ghost and make them alive again. So I went to Senegal, where I work a lot with friends who are craftsmen, who basically works on furnitures and decorative elements. And I started to collaborate with them to help me, because it's a massive work. It's not something you can do alone. It's like a film. You need a team. And then I started to sculpt from pictures, from photographs also. I mean, many of them also coming from researchers in war or historical museum in Germany and in France and in UK. And out of these images that I found, I selected more than 20 soldiers who had their faces destroyed, but they were still alive. And counting also from the age they had in the pictures, the age they would have today, I started to find the piece of wood that has the same age. You know, you can count the age of a wood with the rings inside. And then from these elements, I really wanted to sort of continue in a kind of, not magical, because I don't like this word, but try to unlearn from rationalism, secularism, from everything that also, in the end, aim at controlling your gesture. And you know how much for art the unknown, the non-knowledge, sometimes the mistake, is a very important ground. So I started to reinvite these ghost figures into an installation that display not only busts but also legs, wooden legs, all sculptured in this wood that has been like a sort of the incarnation of the age of the soldiers if they would be still alive today. And then they are crowding I have crowded the space so that the feeling that you have within in front and within the installation involves you into a sort of physical relation with the message, not only visual and objective, but I would even say sort of subjective, in the sense that you are really surrounded by these figures and these uh, and these massive, sculptures, many of them sculpted in a way where you can feel that the axe which was used to sculpt them was not controlled. On the contrary, sometimes the injury of the wood was more important than the figuration of the injury. So I can't say more. I have to say, you have to see it.
So you mean because the material itself was if I understand what you just said, the material itself looks injured in a sense.
Yeah, exactly. It's if you want, there is a sort of mise en abîme, between the desire to represent the injury and also the sort of both violence, but also agency of the injury. As I said before, I think the reparation is also the injury, and vice versa. Sometimes, for me, it's very important to lose control, especially when I'm sculpting, but even when I'm doing pictures. I think it's very important. And the technique of sculpting with an axe on massive piece of wood, very heavy, to also give, I have to say, and I have to admit, that I was also looking for the dignity of these Broken Faces soldiers. Most of the bust I'm sculpting have, for me, a sort of relation in which I really want to be like against, just in French we said a passeur, someone who's just like helping the thing to pass through. I just want to. I really believe that the sometimes we think that museum collectors, anthropologic museum, ethnographic museum do collect objects, but in the end of the day, they are the objects that are collecting us. And I think that this sort of humility is needed when you are representing such such a gravity. The question of, the ethical act of guns, the fact that these people, and in my personal life, I knew a very dear friend who was completely burned and completely disfigured. I know how much it's extremely, almost impossible for these people to show their face in front of a camera. And I have always been touched by the fact that initially, right after the World War I, they all refused. And more than 15 years after, he succeeded in convincing them that it was an emergency, that the war was coming back again. And for me, this says a lot also. It motivates me. It motivated me, and it will motivate me a lot to maintain a sort of dignity of these bodies, of these injured soldiers, without, of course, falling into a pro-military aesthetic like it was actually the case in France, because in France they were celebrated as heroes. But when I did my researches, because I live in Berlin, Germany, I discovered that in Germany, it's the contrary. It's extremely rare to find a picture of a Broken Faces soldier. They have been all completely destroyed. And right after the war, Germany was so humiliated by the Allies, by the Allies, that any traces of heroism was completely, especially that kind of heroism of injured soldiers, was completely erased from the landscape of the society. Even though so many German people I know told me, "Oh, I had a grandfather who was like this, who has not legs because of the war, etc." And I don't know if you remember, the only artist who dared to represent these broken faces were Otto Dix and Georges Grosz, and both of them were condemned by the Nazis, because they were representing the defeat. So I think this notion of giving
Otto
them...
Otto Dix, I didn't know that. Right, Otto Dix, that's very interesting. Wow.
Yeah. It's two different narratives, really. And for me, it's important because also it says a lot about this... another question that I care a lot, and which in the end aren't these works too, is my concern on the way that the Western colonial world has been celebrating beauty as a sort of white, Hellenic in the sense of Greece, then mimetic, aesthetic and narrative, and everything that has to do with the non-mimetic, which was non-mimicking the world, was monstrosity, was a subordinated society, primitivism, etc. So there is also this in the installation. I've always imagined how pre-modern societies would have seen these people, how these pre-modern societies that, for instance, in Africa, were building masks such as the Pende of Congo that have a mouth completely next to the ear and two eyes on the right side, which have inspired Pablo Picasso painting Les Demoiselles d'Avignon. It's still on debate until today, but we all know, we all suspect that so many African, I mean, it's not only a suspicion. You just go to MoMA. Picasso is a genius, right? But there are so many works that he has, I mean, which has been inspired by African pre-modern art. But what I found important to go back to the Broken Faces soldiers is that there is also a sort of enigma on the fact that when in 1918, when they were hauled back from the front, when the war was over, I mean, the first, even for the British and for the whole allies, the American, who were not French but involved in the war, they all went back through Paris, through the Gare de l'Est and Gare du Nord, I mean, by train. So Paris was completely flooded with millions of soldiers like the Broken Faces. Again, the stat says that just the French had 1.5 million of injured faces. And I think that during seven years until 1923, let's say, I mean, in the street of Paris, it was quite common to cross, especially in the 6th arrondissement where there was still is the hospital of Val de Grâce, the military hospital. It was kind of common to cross someone with a sort of asymmetric face. And my question is that because in the 20s, Paris was so much the capital of modern art with Montparnasse and the Surrealism and all this movement of the even Dada, there were many, Zara was in Paris. I mean, it was really like the, between Montparnasse and Montmartre, Paris was really like the Mecca of modern art. And I've always been thinking if Picasso and Braque would have crossed 100 faces in the street, what would happen? Maybe they have seen them. So I'm interested in this sort of, question of what means beauty, what means the polarization of the beauty we know, we've been formatted to, this sort of Greek, Greek, extremely strong in France, Greek, white, marble, mimicking the world, aesthetic, and on the contrary, the unexpected, the unpredictable, the non-knowledge, and that's why for me these figures are much more, they are these incredible soldiers, but they are also the incarnation of a part of ourselves that we actually don't know.
That's fascinating, and so this is, you know, a wonderful kind of way of looking and research, and it's obviously more research you're doing, is what happens with this installation after this iteration, after this show. Is it traveling? Because we just touched on that, but how does this move around the world, or where is the next iteration of your thinking on this? So will it be in a lecture or another installation or a combination of the two?
I mean, I just received recently an invitation which makes me think a lot because of the whole thing I told you right now, and which is in Brazil. And I've been thinking a lot whether I should accept or not. The institution is wonderful; they are doing an amazing job. It's also very public money, so it's not only an art space; it's also a place where people go to have to eat. There's a library. It's called the Sesc Pompey. And to be honest, if I can make it travel, I would definitely send it to Brazil, definitely, because I think that art when it brings by its own, message or raison d'être, an agora of debate and, deconstructing and constructing again systems of living. When it just brings the debate is important, and I think there are some, countries today where this is more than an emergency. So I will see, maybe Jacques will go to São Paulo, and that would be maybe the an interesting continuity of this pathway that it has taken.
And I want to thank you for talking with me today. There's more information in here, of course, about your website and other things you're working on. I want to ask you one last question, which is, what are you reading at the moment?
Oh, wow, I'm reading, I would say, unfortunately, because I'm a bit late on some readings, but I'm reading probably 5 books at the same time. There's one really that relaxed me, and it's something I would like to mention here. Also, I read a lot of theory, but this one is not at all a theory. It's the story of Mary Barnes. I'm reading it in French, Un voyage à travers la folie, A Trip Through Madness. And it's the story of, apparently a real story of a woman who was, insane, and she used to, since she was a child, actually, to have a very strange affective relation with her shit. And she was, I think, early 18 in an asylum, finally. She comes from a very clean family, from a normal family, bourgeois, but with no abuse at all. But she was just, like, different. And in the hospital, she started to paint on the wall with her own shit. And a psychiatrist, a man who is also a painter amateur, start to be fascinated by the painting. But because it's shit and it smells very bad, everyone is like cannot stand it. So there's a sort of strike by the whole people working in the hospital, the nurse, against the director, so that they fired her. And even the mad people of the hospital, the whole patients, decide to exclude her. So she, in the end, they exclude her at the opposite side of the park in a small, humid house where she's alone. And for me, it's very interesting because it's also incarnate this sort of figure of the artist is definitely always rejected. Then the director will change because of the whole strike and... And then there is a moment where someone bring her new materialist, another psychiatrist who paint as well, and said, "Oh, she should paint with normal paint, and then we won't have the problem of the smell." And so then he teach her how to paint with oil paint, and then she start to paint and enjoy it, and even cure her. She become more, nicer, and she feels better. The only problem is that now painting up not good, not interesting at all. And I found this very interesting.
And what's her name? Yeah. It's a fascinating
Mary
story.
Mary, like Marie Barnes, Barnes.
Yes, it's just fascinating. Yeah, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.